episode 147 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about what we played in April. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Aaron and I talk about the games that we liked and didn't like last month. A quick correction as we head into the episode, we said that the game Garinto had a grid larger than 5x5, but it is indeed exactly 5x5. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to myself and Aaron talking about our picks for Board Game of the Month for April 2024.
You know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a pretty fun franchise.
You're going to have to fast forward to what this has to do with anything.
Well, there was that reporter, April.
You know how last month I said we didn't need a pun for every month?
I did hear that.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For April, we didn't play that many games, as it turns out. It felt like we were going to, and sometimes things change. Yeah. We did play games every weekend at the coffee house.
Yeah, I was
However,
surprised
that is
the list
only
was...
where we played games.
I was surprised the list was as small as it was.
I know. It felt like we were doing more games, and we played some stuff on BGA, mm-hmm. so that also kind of factors in here. That we would do here and there. We also don't tend to play BGA games at home either.
Right.
So I don't know what was going on, but we didn't play games. I think we both worked a little more.
I had a lot of work stuff going on, so yeah.
And we would have liked. In any case, we did still play. I played 18 games. You played 12.
Yeah. That's
no,
accurate.
It's not awful, but it's just far less than we thought.
We were coming off Dice Tower West, you know. Just...
Well, I mean, in March, we played so many games.
Well, that's right. We also went to, did we go to two?
I think so.
Conferences
I think
in March?
Technically, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really high last month, but we did expect, I expected to keep riding that wave a little bit and died right down. The games that were played were Paint the Roses, Codex Naturalis, Heat Pedal to the Metal, Starship Captains, Books of Time, Garinto, New York Zoo, Can't Stop, Splendor Duel, Star Wars The Deck Building Game, Corinth, The Gig, Railroad Inc. Deep Blue Edition, Super Mega Lucky Box, Deep Dive, Taco Cat Spelled Backwards, Draftosaurus, Sky Team. That's it.
There you go.
So what was played the most? You didn't play anything twice.
No, my agent was one.
Yeah, I played Paint the Roses, Codex, and Heat twice. And all of those ended up being twice because they were BGA games.
Right.
Yeah. What games were added to the collection? Planet Unknown, which was the last game that we got from Barnes & Noble. We had some gift cards. Went there a few times, got some stuff. And then Codex Naturalis, I played that first on BGA. Then looked for a copy to buy. It's not in America so much, but Amazon was selling a copy from Europe for a normal price with the regular like Prime shipping or whatever, but it also took like 3 weeks to get here. And I've got enough games, so I just went for that. Went for the slow shipping on it. It comes in a very nice metal tin, and it's a small game. It's kind of hard to tell on BGA when that's all you've played it. Like, how big is this game really? I sort of looked at it online and thought, okay, I think it's smallish. Comes in a very nice little metal tin, and it does make for a good travel game as well. The cards are pretty small. It can get big as you play, the way that you kind of like build this scoring tableau tile laying sort of thing in front of you. Yeah, nice little game.
Yeah.
No games were sold, and I think, I don't know that I'm going to do anything different than save up all the for sale games every year and donate them. So I might change that from being literally games that are sold to like games that are going on the outgoing shelf or something like that. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So, but nothing actually left. And I don't think there was anything.
Is the outgoing shelf empty?
Ooh, not quite. It doesn't, you don't have to lock it in quite as hard when you're not like really selling it yet. But there's certainly a questionable area with a few games on it. And we still have the collection, so we might just stick with that and take out what games we sold, because I don't know that I'm actually going to sell any, aside from maybe selling to people or giving games away to people. Where and who did we play games with? Some online friends on BGA. We played with one another on BGA. And then we played only at the coffee house, as we said before.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the summary of how our month in review went gaming-wise. Back to the table. What game would you like to play more?
So I'm going to say that I want to play more Garinto.
Oh, okay.
And it's like a logic moving pieces kind of game. I'm not really... We played it like early in the month.
It has like a... no, it's bigger than 5x5, 6x6, 7x7 kind of grid. There's all these square tiles. They stack on top of one another. So to start, you just randomly put out this grid of tiles. They're plastic. They, you know, you just kind of shake them up in a bag. And they come in 5-ish colors. And then the way that you play the game, you're collecting those colors. And when you take your turn to collect a color, how you take them off the board is determined by the color that you've chosen.
Right.
So one color says you can pick up tiles in a horizontal line or a vertical line or, you know, orthogonally around that tile or the ones all in that stack of tiles. It's things like that. The more tiles you get of a color, the more selections you get to take in that manner when you pick up that color.
Yeah. And the board kind of transforms throughout the game. And the reason I would want to play more of it
refills.
Is just like, you know, predicting and understanding future board states and planning what you think your opponent might do is, I think you could play it a lot before you really played it well. But I mean, we had fun playing it.
And it would be different every time you played it as well. And there are different scoring conditions that come out. So there's a lot of variety, both because how the actual board gets set up every time is going to be so different since it's just randomly coming out there. How the tiles come out, that would be enough. But there's also different like scoring conditions and bonuses because there's like a scoring by round, like every round that you go through.
Right.
You then like stop and do scoring. So it can kind of change who's scoring how much at different times. Whoever is behind in scoring gets to go first in the next round.
Right.
So there's like a little bit of an advantage there depending on how things come out. So yeah, it's at the beginning of the game, you kind of feel like you can't get enough of the tiles to really do anything. And then at the end of the game, you have far more tiles than you need and can use because even though tiles come back out, it still generally depletes throughout the game.
Right.
So you might have 6 orange tiles, which means you could take an entire column of things. But at the end of the game, there's not even a whole column to take. And even if there were, you don't want them because it's going to mess up your scoring. Because a lot of the scoring is like comparing how many of different types of tiles you have.
Yeah, it's
needing them to be in certain ratios.
I think there's a lot to it. And it's simple, and I want to try to play more
game. Yeah, and it's a nice looking game. It's a bit chunky, but that helps you see what you're doing and helps you keep everything like organized and clear. Because the tile stacking means that you can also see everyone else's stacks as they're collecting them.
Yeah.
You kind of need that information to inform your choices
because what they're going to do based on their stacks, and then that's going to affect the future board state in a predictable way, and then
it's going to affect what you might want to do because there might be something that kind of benefits you, but you're like, "Well, if I leave this for them, then they're going to score so much more." And that we're talking a 2-player game. It does go, I think it's 1 to 4 players probably. So yeah, in a 2-player game especially, like if I don't take something, they will get that something. My back to the table is Starship Captains. And that's one, it looks like Star Trek because they have like red shirt, yellow shirt, blue shirt people. You're kind of adventuring around the galaxy. It has like a bit of humor to it. Like it's definitely not taking itself very seriously. It's so close to being Star Trek that it's surprising it isn't just Star Trek in a nearly copyright infringement sort of way. And you are leading a ship. You're going around the galaxy and you're trying to complete tasks, ultimately to score points. And we played this one. It was at the coffee shop, but it was a big game to be playing at the coffee shop. We weren't even on one of their bigger tables, but it was fun. I got near the end. I kind of felt like I didn't have much to do. It didn't affect my overall point scoring. And I think we ended the game pretty close. So I'd kind of like to see it again because different missions would come out depending on what you do. There's enough variability to what's happening that it'd be interesting to see it iterate a few times.
Right.
When your actions are your crew, and there's a unique way that your crew kind of like, as you take actions, they sort of go into a queue. And then at the end of every round, that's just when you're out of people to do things with, your round's over. They then refill into your action pool, but not fully. 3 of them stay in the queue. So then there's a little bit of this extra strategy you could choose to engage with or not, of like, okay, so if I put this person in here now, then I'm going to get them back. But if you wait till the end of your turn to use someone, they're not going to be there in your next round. And deciding you can upgrade people as well, deciding who you want to upgrade and why. You're upgrading people, get more actions. Each different color or rank or specialization of your crew gives you a different action. So it's like there's a lot to think about there as well. So every time you play, you might have more red crew members or more yellow crew members, which is going to change the way that you execute the game. So I just like to play it a few more times to see sort of the different options that are available there. It might all end up feeling kind of the same, and then maybe, you know, then maybe it's not the best game. It might feel pretty different every time as far as when you feel stressed, when you feel like you have a lot to do. Like I said, in our play, at the end, I felt like I didn't really have anything left to do meaningful. It kind of was just like, oh, I see how many turns I have left. I see the people I have. There's nothing that exciting left to do here. I'm just going to get a couple points and see if that's enough at the end.
Yeah, I felt like the worker placement die, I feel like that's maybe just a thing that happened to you because it's the first time you played. I think that worker placement like mechanic was really fun where you had to cycle through. I mean, I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not that I didn't have high expectations coming in. I've heard good things about it, but I agree that the way that your pool of workers cycled through was really interesting. For the collection, that's C-U-L-L, what game might not stay? I'm just going to go ahead and say that Taco Cat spelled backwards was okay.
How do you spell Taco Cat backwards?
Taco Cat. And that's fine. The only way that really comes into the gameplay at all is that there is this track in the middle. I do like how you play it out of the box. And that's true of, what's that cat and mouth game?
Oh, which is more of a game of cat and mouth.
Yeah, game of cat and mouth. That is a dexterity kind of game made by the same people. You also play that one in the box. I like the concept of, oh, we open the box and that's the board. Now, that's very fun. But otherwise,
you don't like either of those games.
Again, I like the box design. And then I like how colorful they are. The art's nice. The components are, I think, as good as they need to be. They're not like always amazing, but they're definitely as good as they need to be. And this is just kind of it's a two-player only game, I think. And it's just some cards. You play the cards. You end up moving this thing back and forth until it gets to the end. And it's absolutely a way to pass the time. It is not like an engaging, you should have a conversation active.
No, you just shouldn't play it.
I mean, I'm saying if you were having an active conversation, like you wanted to catch up with someone, you could play the game and catch up with someone, and then you would have gotten two things done. But yeah. It's not great. Maybe it's better for like kids.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. It's really just true. It's interesting because it's by a, and you know, I guess a game of cat and mouth, also good for kids. Maybe that's their
They might thing. Be aiming a little younger. Like that might be the whole point, is that it's meant to be a bit more family. Because it's not hard to learn.
No.
It's not hard to, you know what choices to make and play the game. There's like the tiniest bit of strategy, but that's still so much reliant on the luck of what you draw that it's not.
Yeah.
It's really not worth
it. You've chosen an objectively bad game for the collection, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
I've chosen what's probably a great game for the collection.
Oh.
I don't ever need to play Star Wars, the deck building game again.
Oh, you didn't like it.
No, I didn't.
Why didn't you like it again?
Because there was just too much. I make a plan and then you crush my plan. And I didn't like it. And I don't like that in deck building games. Like Dominion Intrigue is my least favorite of the ones because there's more interactivity.
What was I doing to you that was so bad? Making you discard?
Crushing my life. Okay. You made me discard cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was discarding cards.
Yeah, and you did in the end kill me or the planets that
that's what we're trying to do anyway. So you can hardly put that on me specifically.
Well, I'm just pointing.
But I do think it's true that I like that it is, a lot of times you don't like asymmetric two-player games. Not that asymmetric, because you both get cards, you both have planets that you want to survive, and you're trying to attack the other person's planets.
Yeah.
You might not have the same planet available at the same time, and you don't have literally the same planets either. Sometimes they have the same like abilities or general amount of strength at the same time.
Honestly, the theming was really good.
The theming was good. And I like that for a deck building two-player game, as cards come out in the middle, it's not just like anybody takes whatever card. There are, Rebel and
Alliance
cards that are specifically for those people. And so as the rebel player, I can attack the alliance cards.
Yeah.
There's also mercenary stuff that either person can take. So I think that's really interesting. And you will find yourself sometimes as one side or the other being like, there's no cards for me to get up there.
Well, and I think that's one thing, like the luck, like it could have some pretty high luck swings because like
there's some unique cards for each one.
In our playthrough, there's a type of card that you can use to like defend your planets. And I didn't have access to even look at one of those until like halfway through the game.
Right. But you also didn't lose by that much.
Well, that doesn't mean, I mean, honestly, it wasn't that I didn't like it. I did not like the experience. In general, I don't like when I have made a plan and then my plan is roundly thwarted by an action on your side.
I don't think that it was as aggressive as you're making it out to be. Now, I will say the first time that I played this game, we were out of town with Adam. I don't know what you were doing.
I was working and we were in a coffee shop.
You were
in Intelligista, I believe.
Who knows? Hardly the important point for me. And I played with Adam, who beat me worse than I beat you, for sure. He has an inherent understanding about deck building games and their math and what's probably going to be true about the deck when he just starts playing it. So I was doing a little better, I think, in this playthrough than my first one because I sort of understood it. But it was a thing where I lost by a lot. And we had discussed afterwards, he had gotten access to a unique character of his that was powerful. I had unique characters that were powerful in the deck as well that we just didn't get to.
Right.
And so we were discussing, like, is there always a way to counteract that? Or is it a situation where if the luck is just right, there's not really much for you to do about it? I think that's still up in the air. I think it could be possible. I think both could be possible, but it might be a narrower amount of chance. There might be a narrower percentage of outcomes where there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's probably balanced, but I don't have any interest in finding out.
Yeah, that's too bad. As a two-player game, that you don't like it, because I do like it.
Oh. I mean, I'll play it again with you if you want.
Yeah.
And I'll attempt to be good-spirited about it.
It's not seeming super likely right now. Okay, so that's collection. And here we are. We're recording on May the 4th.
Oh, it's Star Wars Day.
One of the few only Star Wars games that we have? Only?
I feel like there's got to be like one more, but I'm looking at the games and I don't see another one.
I don't know that we have any more. And that's fine. I mean, we don't have to have Star Wars games. And finally, Game of the Month. Do you want to go with your Game of the Month first?
Yeah, my Game of the Month is a really easy one. Like, it was a short list this month, but this would have won Game of the Month in many other months as well. But we played a game called Books of Time.
And Books of Time is your game of the month.
Books of Time is my game of the month. Yeah, today when someone asked me what my favorite game of the year was, I said that game.
You did. I'm not good at picking favorites in that way. And so I'm like, well, if I'm going to pick my favorite, I'm very deliberative as well. I'm like, I'm going to have to look over everything. I'm going to have to weigh the options. But you did suggest Book of Times was your favorite. And I didn't know if that was just because it was a recency bias. Or if it was an evaluation actually on everything we played.
It's potentially a little bit of a recency bias, but also like if you look at the month, like at the games we played this month, I think it stands out. It's, you know, you get these little binders. It's very well produced, and throughout the game, you're just adding pages to your binder, and those pages like have actions that you can take actively or passively in different ways, and then managing. Like I played the game okay at the end. I like. Had an opportunity to score a bunch more points, but I kind of got focused on the wrong thing. And I think there's so many options and it could be an AP type of game, but I still had a ton of fun and I really liked the mechanic and the large quantity of ways I think there probably is to score high.
Right. There's so many options, which what's good about that. Sometimes you, like I was just saying about other games that we play, we get to the end, I got to the end of Starship Captains and I was like, well, I don't really have anything to do now, but the game's not over. So I think it is nice when there's a large variety of options. I think that can make it easier to play casually. You just pick something and you do it and it's fine. It can make it harder to play strategically and get into some AP for what you are evaluating. I think we're going to do a review of that one. Even more so now that you've picked it as your game of the month. So I won't say too much more about it. We'll just kind of save it for that review. But I do think that as you're picking the pages to add to your collection of actions across these three binders, there's lots of different reasons why you might pick a page. And I don't think we were picking pages always for the same reasons. And you could be orchestrating your actions a bit more. And in our play of it, I was not orchestrating my actions at all. So like
I basically set up a great set of orchestrated actions and then didn't use them.
Didn't use it.
And it would have worked. Like I retroed it back. And I'm like, oh, I should have just like I was really focused on that dumb extra thing. And I should have just done what I was planning to the whole time. But it was I still had a lot of fun, even though I botched it at the end.
Yeah. And I bought that one a bit on a whim. I hadn't heard a lot about it. I think I got it at our game store. I think it's by Board and Dice. They make a lot of Euro games, but not necessarily. I feel like that one doesn't seem highly similar, at least in the components, to their other games. Yeah.
But the production quality also very high for
It just barely fits back in that box, but yes. And the unpacking, the organizing of it, because you do have all these loose pages, is a bit much. But again, we're going to have a separate review on that. My game of the month, well, it was almost a lot of things, but I picked The Gig.
Oh,
because
nice.
I didn't expect you to like it. And even when we started playing it, you were sort of like, I don't like this. But it moves along really fast. This was a Kickstarter game. I'm imagining it's hard to find. Everyone gets their own set of dice, but there's one common book, like gig book, that you're playing out of in the theme of this. And that book has, you know, different lines of the music. Again, that's what's happening thematically, but really it's rows of boxes.
Yeah.
And everyone, it's real time. So everyone starts rolling their dice at the same time. And then you're trying to place your dice onto this collective book. And once someone has placed all their dice onto the book, everyone else has to stop rolling. Only if something's in your hand can you roll it. You have to then find a spot on this book. And everyone has an instrument that they're playing, which is their other. It's like this is otherwise it's a roll and write, but a little different, I think, than any other one. You have a dry erase sheet or like a little whiteboard that has your instrument on it.
Right.
And that instrument has a collection of icons.
It's asymmetric a bit.
Yeah. Because that individual like player power kind of thing. Because everyone has their own instrument that has its own kind of special ability. And depending on how you've laid out your dice on the collective sheet music, that is like a shape that you draw and get to activate symbols on your individual instrument. And then you also have a second board where you are collecting icons to score points. I mean, the theme is starting to break down by the time we get to that second board. It's all very like kind of 60s or maybe even 50s sort of theming and feeling to it as far as like the art style goes, but it's really well done. The Kickstarter one came with, I mean, more dice than you like. There's so many dice in it. And the dice are musical notes, which is just a nice, they're wooden dice, which is just a nice little touch to add on to it. It has a solo mode.
It's just a collection of 64th notes on one beat. It's pretty fun.
I will take your word for the type of notes that they are. You said about it when we first started playing and I was explaining the rules, like, you're like, I don't think I'm gonna like this. Then because of how fast every round goes, you're like, you know what? This is fine. And I think that's true. There is a balance between if it was a longer thing, because you play six songs and you feel like I'm going to be doing this for a while, but because the rounds are so fast, there's another little extra bit that we didn't play with where you can like have these cards that have people on them and you can try to like meet their scoring conditions. We played the most basic version, but I think I don't know that adding that is actually going to make the game better. It might make it different.
Yeah,
not sure it would make it better.
Yeah, I think it would make it. I think it would be fine. We should try it.
Yeah, and
since it's your game of the month.
Yeah, the book comes with more songs than you play in one setting of the game, and there are these little cards that show your set list.
Right.
So every time you play, you kind of pick a different set list, and you end up playing different songs. But they're not so different that I think it would ultimately matter. You'd have to play it a ton for it to really matter that you play a different set, because you're going to be rolling and all that stuff anyway. But yeah, it was just sometimes, you know, when you're getting those Kickstarter games, even if you watch a playthrough, even for whatever reason, there's still a bit of it's still a bit up in the air as to how much you'll like it and how well that's going to go over. I think that's one of the better games that I've gotten from Kickstarter without it being from some kind of big established brand as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that is our April.
What are you looking forward to?
Game of the month.
Or do you want me to stop asking you this at the end of these episodes?
I feel like we do need a way to kind of transition.
No puns, no looking forward to.
I think we should still do looking forward to. We have already played some things this month because, again, April just kind of got away from us. We've already played some things this month that I think I otherwise might have said looking forward to. But generally speaking, let's see, we're coming into May. Now we could do, this would be very local, like this would be a very local thing to do. We could play racing games this month because The Race, well, here we call it The Race, but it's the Indy 500 is this month, is on Memorial Day weekend. So that would be like kind of cute that our month in review would have racing games like Flam Rouge, and what's the rally? Was it called Rally?
Didn't we just, we recently played a racing game that we liked, a new one, but we played that. We don't have that, right? We played that at the HoosierCon.
The racing, Heat. Well, yeah, it's on Board Game Arena, and it was one of the ones that was played this month. Rallyman GT is the other one that I'm thinking of. Cubitos is a kind of racing.
Oh, we should play Cubitos. You know what? That's what I'm looking forward to. Talking Kelly into playing Cubitos because of the race.
You don't have to talk me into it. I already said we just play all of our racing games.
Let's do it right now.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to episode 147. Be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at Variant Hex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com, and you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. As we've mentioned before, we don't have a schedule for our episodes. We always have a Game of the Month episode and try to have something released in between those, but for now, our queue is empty. So the next episode will be a bit of a surprise. Unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 146 more episodes headed your way, the next one being a coffee shop games episode, where we highlight two games that can be played on a small table with a variety of player counts. Episode 146 was about Project L and Junk Orbit. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.